Okay, I think it's probably time to get started because the last panel ran a little bit over, and this panel's starting late, and we're going to try to finish up by 6 or soon thereafter. So there's actually two panels in this session with closely related topics. The first hour, and we'll probably cut it a little bit short of an hour, was for a discussion of malicious conduct and new GTLDs. And my name's Greg Rattray. I'm ICANN's Chief Internet Security Advisor. I'm going to moderate both panels, start this one off and with a presentation, and then have each of us 5 speakers comment on the materials we've published with this version of the Draft Applicant Guidebook and the other remediation measures we've put in place. The second panel, which we'll try to get started close to 5:30, is on malicious abuse and consumer protection. The notion there is we have a number of representatives from international law enforcement agencies that are going to provide specific perspectives and examples of concerns that they have and suggestions about what needs to be done. So those are the two panels, again, highly related but distinct. So with the beginning of the first panel, the real intent here is to engage the community with the measures that we've put in the new applicant guidebook, as well as something called an expedited registry security request process, and then I think very significantly a concept paper that we've tabled on a high security zone verification program, and get some feedback both from the speakers and from the community, or at least initiate the feedback from the community on whether those are the right measures. So with that, I'm going to press through a presentation I've used to orient people on what is in this version of the DAG. And I'm going to go pretty quick. So I don't want to talk a lot about process. We used a pretty typical process for the overarching issues. We consulted the community. Staff took what you're going to see is a large volume of input in on these, summarized those and proposed solutions, which are now out in the draft applicant guidebook and in a couple other places. And we're in the public comment process. These are the sources of information we used on the overarching issue related to the potential for increased malicious conduct and how we should approach mitigation of those concerns. You have experts from all of the groups listed on the bottom of the slide here on the panel today, and I'll be introducing them as they turn to speak comes up. Significantly, we've tried to group the input that we received around 4 key issues, which you see here, that bad actors are not running registries, that we ensure the integrity and the utility of the information that registries provide in terms of technical measures that make sure that that's the right information and it's hard for malicious actors to subvert or misuse. Also, that in the processes surrounding registry operations, that they're enabling of more focused efforts by the response community, and we certainly have representatives of those who respond to incidents of malicious conduct here on the panel. And then we got strong input, which we'll discuss probably a little more length, about the potential for certain zones, quintessentially banking and finance zones, though certainly others, are going to be the natural targets of malicious activity, and that those zones beg for some sort of enhanced control framework that allows increased confidence and trust that the measures being taken to combat malicious conduct are at a higher grade of higher quality. And we are going to talk about a proposed verification program that might institute such a control framework. So I'm going to go through each of the responses at the first 3 levels and then a little more depth on the verification program. So in terms of vetted registry operators, you know, the draft applicant guidebook includes specific provisions to deny applications based on a number of criteria here related to personnel or organizational interests in the applicants. That would indicate the wrong type of history, whether it's financial misconduct or fraud, prior bad behavior effectively related to operations in the domain name system. And we want to explore approaches to establishing criteria based on prior criminal conduct. The key here is the worst case scenario is that a registry is owned by somebody that's explicitly facilitating malicious conduct. In terms of ensuring the integrity of the data that there is associated with registry operations, three primary steps contemplated. Is an explicit requirement that both the application includes a plan for DNSSEC deployment and that operations at day one of a new GTLD registry will be DNSSEC enabled from the beginning. There's also a prohibition on wildcarding. This is in line with an SSAC recommendation to the board and a board resolution to the effect that this is not permissible behavior, and then new GTLDs, it'll be explicitly prohibited. And therefore, there'll need to be a plan as part of the application for ensuring that doesn't happen with all DNS zone files maintained by the registry operator. And then finally, and in part due to the guy on my left, the anti-phishing working group has identified the fact that some malicious activity, 3% of all the domains, but a significant amount of the fast flux activity associated with malicious activity actually utilizes something that's termed orphan glue records, or in some ways dormant records that are existent within the domain name system. We could get into more detail, but that the DAG requires a plan for the removal of those orphan glue records as part of the processes in a new registry. The third area is enabling the response community. So there's a number of provisions that we believe will allow that to occur. It's similar to the IRT recommendation and some of the mitigation steps related to trademark protection, thick whois data. It's the same provision for both trademark protection and combating malicious activity. We have decided to put in a proposal that we would be allowed to call for centralization of zone file access. We understand there's some interest in how that might be implemented and potential concerns about how that would work. We definitely want to work with the community. The notion here, however, is that those who have to get information from registries to understand if activity is malicious and respond to it currently has to do that on a one-by-one basis with the registries. And if there's large numbers of new registries, that becomes a much more difficult proposition. The new applicant guidebook requires that each registry identifies an abuse contact and how that person or how that registry will be contacted related to abuse, and requires that a documented abuse policy be put in place. It is not specific about the provisions of that policy, but we wanted to ensure that each of the new registries at least put out publicly how they plan to handle issues of malicious conduct. And then finally, ICANN has instituted something called the Expedited Registry Security Request Process. This really stems from our experience in the Conficker worm situation, where some of the registries needed to make requests of ICANN in order to undertake actions that they felt like might be not in line with their contractual obligations, but in line with doing good security. And we wanted to ensure that we had an expedited process for receiving such requests and authorizing them. And that process is actually in place. It's really something that will be available to new registries when they begin operation. So quickly on the high security zone verification program, there is a concept paper that's published as part of the DAG version 3 materials. The notion here is that in a zone such as a banking and finance zone, we want to provide enhanced consumer trust, ensure that there's internal control frameworks in those GTLDs that may well be targeted, and that we're going to have to work hard to define the right standards for both security but operational processes. This is in response, as I mentioned, to a lot of feedback that we needed to have a second higher level of verified security in certain situations. There's a number of things in the concept paper that are listed on the slide, so in the interest of time, I'm not going to read each of those. The end of that concept paper also lists a number of key considerations that require a lot more analysis and discussion, things like liability, cost, cost burdens and how those will be allocated. We understand all that. We're really at the start of the process of surfacing the idea that such a program would be useful, and then we'll have to flesh out the specifics of that program considerably further. So again, if you look through, and I encourage all of you to look through the concept paper, these are the types of elements that you see in the concept paper. And then a key aspect of this is a completely voluntary program. This is not something that is part of the application process. It's separate from that. It is currently, the concept paper doesn't say it's for new GTLDs. It says it's for TLDs. So our concept currently is open to the broad range of CC and GTLDs, effectively all comers in this regard. We do intend to develop this in concert with the new GTLD program, and crucially, we'll be forming a working group, which we plan to initiate right after this meeting, and we'll be soliciting participation by the community, everybody from the registries that might, people represent registry interests that might be, affected by such a program, or the people that would seek such a certification, security experts, process experts in auditing, and make sure that we design a viable program and one that works for the community as a whole. So with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Rod Rasmussen as our first speaker. He's the CTO of Internet Identity. He's also the co-chair of the Anti-Phishing Working Group's Internet Policy Committee, and been a primary source of our dialogue on these issues related to malicious conduct. So, Rod, with that, over to you.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you to the ICANN community for having us again and listening to us. I don't have a slideshow this time for a change, so I'm going to just talk about some of these points that have come up and get you some feedback from the organization and some of my own personal observations on this. The timing on this meeting actually was very good from the APWG's standpoint, because we had our annual or semi-annual meeting just last week and covered new GTLDs in a panel session at that meeting. We had some interesting feedback I'd like to share with you on that. We pulled the audience as to how many people in our community that were at the meeting were familiar with the new GTLE program, and I'd say about 95% of the people there were familiar with the launch of new GTLDs. So that's very good penetration of the message out there. So that was a question I'd had. And then just a general kind of question, do you think this is a good idea, a bad idea, or do you not have enough information? And it was about an even split amongst those three. About the expansion itself. So there's some feedback from you for an unofficial straw poll, as it were. But at that meeting, we also had our steering committee meeting, and we were able to talk about some of these issues there. And I'd say in general, the feedback as to the new DAG was positive as to the inclusion of basically nine areas addressing malicious conduct. And I was just going to comment on some of those in particular so that we can get into that. Of course, the areas covered were again, met positively. The question was, of course, what are the details? And that's where the devil always lies. And I think that many in this community are still looking for some of the details to be fleshed out on a lot of these things. So, but I think that in general, the community is very positive about the direction this has moved in. So I'm just going to run quickly through a few things. The registry control and ownership issue, so keeping the malicious actors from actually running a registry, is obviously a very primary issue as far as we're concerned. We've seen what bad guys can do with access on just a very low level. So we're pleased to see what's going on there. We're just cautious to we want to make sure that these provisions cover not just ownership but also key operating personnel of these registries, so that there can't be gaming of the system, so to speak, to keep put up a front, as it were, to get past the application process, and then the bad guys really are pulling the strings behind the scenes. We had some concerns about various strings and things like that could be exploited. I think this wasn't hit directly, other than, of course, with the high security zones. But I think we've been pretty well convinced from the technical side that that's not going to be an issue that we're going to have to worry about. The high security zone, we're very favorable. We look very favorably upon that. Again, though, there's a lot to be worked out there and how exactly that will come about. One of the areas that we felt was not well covered is kind of gets into the area of transparency and accountability. And, you know, the idea that you know your customer. You know, financial institutions have to know who they are dealing with. Many other businesses, et cetera, have to know who they're dealing with. And in particular, the issue revolves around the issue of resellers of domain names, where a lot of the misuse and abuse has occurred in the last few years. So that's an area that we didn't see really much coverage here, and we're disappointed about, and you'll probably be hearing more about that coming up in the future. But basically, the idea is to allow the people who are trying to pursue these crimes, et cetera, that are being perpetrated, have the ability to figure out who is in charge of putting these things into the zone in the first place. I think that some of the scaling issues we had were well addressed. We have the unified access was one of those areas that I think covers many of the things we need. There are other areas in scaling of this that we'd like to see in the guidebook, and I think that's in there in other areas, is really just strong testing of the applicants to make sure that they're legally, et cetera, operationally, they're ready to go when they're actually hit the street, so to speak. Who is issues is kind of one of those long-standing things. I think that the thick who is very welcome as a step on that. Of course, we'd really like to see accuracy in who is the in the response community, because not only is it to uncover bad guys, but really, when it gets down to it, most phishing sites, malware sites, et cetera, are on somebody's hacked server. And so when you're a responder trying to get something fixed, Whois is an invaluable tool for being able to talk to the person who actually owns that server. In fact, it kind of is why Whois exists in the first place, is to find, you know, notify people of problems with their servers. So accurate Whois is a key thing for a response, and it really does help protect registrants of domain names. The registry contracts and procedures, or contacts and procedures, big kudos for that. Again, the devil's in the details, and Greg mentioned that there wasn't really a how-to, just that you needed to enumerate them. I think that you're going to hear from our community that there should be at least be some minimum standards to be met, and I don't know what those are going to be. Just a couple other thoughts. The orphans, Greg covered, and wildcarding, those weren't in our original comments, but are things that we've been talking about within the community, and we welcome those. So that's our quick rundown of our feedback on what's included in the DAG.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Rod. With that, we'll turn it over to Adam Palmer, the policy counsel for .org. Adam's here today representing the Registry Internet Safety Group, or RISG, a group of major ICANN community members dedicated to fighting online fraud and identity theft. So, Adam, you have the floor.
Thank you. I am actually here on behalf also of my CEO, Alexa Rod, who is the chair of RISG. She was not able to be present. She asked me to represent RISG on her behalf. But this has been an effort that was begun by PIR and others to be a group that is differentiated from other similar groups such as APWG, but to have a registry focus. And it includes a number of the largest registries, registrars, and security vendors from the ICANN community, with the goal that we can be thought leaders and discuss best practices to combat online fraud, internet and identity theft across the internet, and be a leader for new registries and registrars as the internet expands potentially in the next year, that it becomes even more critical for thought leaders in this area, ones that have had success in combating abuse, such as several members of the RASG group, to be thought leaders and to lead by example and to collaborate to reduce and fight abuse in new registries that might arise. So, as I described, the RASG group is a fairly new group. For those who may not be familiar with it, it was started approximately a year and a half ago with the stated goals to facilitate dialogue and collaboration, to effect change, and to create and adopt best practices to address internet identity theft in all of its forms. These are just an illustration of some of the members of RASG. As you can see, there's a wide spectrum of the internet community, of the ICANN community, that includes both GTLDs and CCTLDs globally. Also, security vendors from Mark Monitor, McAfee, Shinkuro, Symantec, and also global law enforcement. In fact, during our meeting, we meet monthly. We also have a face-to-face meeting during the ICANN conference. And in fact, this this week, we are having a presentation from SOCA, which is the cybercrime unit for the UK, to describe their efforts. So it's a way for us to share data amongst each other and to also share information and to learn from law enforcement about what their concerns are so that we can better support them and work with them to combat abuse. Also the major registrars, of course. So the idea of RASG, again, is a collaboration of multiple stakeholders to provide a voice and different perspectives on what we're seeing for abuse and how we can best stop it. And I think PIR has been excited to be involved with it and be a thought leader on it and to be the chair of the board right now. We've implemented an abuse program, as have others. We've seen dramatic improvements, which actually I will be describing on a panel later this week, but we've seen a significant reduction in abuse in our own TLD, and that's something that we're very proud of, and we want to share with people and demonstrate that it is possible to combat abuse and feasible for a registry. Again, some of the ideas that we're exploring right now are best practices in data sharing, anti-phishing, what types of threats to handle, how to respond to those threats, how to do so effectively at the registry level. And we're hoping that others will voluntarily follow. We're not trying to be a policy-setting group. We are not combating trademark abuse. We're not. That's a civil issue. We are only discussing and collaborating on criminal matters or matters that we believe, you know, how we can affect criminal matters and mitigate them and promote voluntary adoption. So I'll conclude very quickly. I know we're limited on time. Sorry for 5 minutes, and it may be a little difficult to see. But to emphasize, we did submit comments for ICANN's consideration in the upcoming or in the DAG that was released. We were happy to see some of those recommendations adopted, such as the advice on Thick Who Is and an abuse policy, which, again, we believe has been highly successful among some of our members, such as PIR. We are going to submit comments on the DAG. It's a bit premature that I'm speaking to you because we have not done that yet, and I apologize that I can't speak directly to what our comments will be, other than to say that very soon we are working collaboratively and forming groups to submit comments on the DAG and to work with ICANN, we believe, to improve the security of new GTLDs. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. With this, we're going to turn the mic over to Paul Smucker. He's the Vice President of Security Initiatives for BITS. BITS members include the 100 largest U.S.-based financial institutions. Paul coordinated the work of BITS with the ABA, the Financial Services Technology Consortium, and the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Council in submitting the requirements to ICANN related to their perspective on from a financial services orientation related to new GTLDs. So with that, Paul, over to you.
Thanks, Greg, and thanks as well to ICANN for this opportunity. Just a couple minutes on quick history here. BITS has been working with ICANN for a number of years before the new GTLD process even came up around the question of malicious conduct. So this is not a new relationship for us. And through versions 1 and 2 of the draft applicant guidebook, we, along with, independently, the ABA as well, submitted a series of comments, a lot of which dealt with the question of malicious conduct. Subsequent to those submissions, the ICANN staff and we started to engage in some informal conversations that eventually led to the opportunity for the four associations that Greg mentioned and are listed there to put together a little more formal set of requirements around what we saw as being important to financial services, global top-level domains. Obviously, as an industry, we are a significant user of the Internet for product delivery and product service. And unfortunately, consequently, as a result, we are probably, as an industry, one of the most highly attacked, both our institutions and our customers. So it's important to us that as we move forward in this space, that we do it with the right security and the right stability. We actually submitted two documents to ICANN. The first was a set of requirements around security, stability, and resiliency. And those actually broke down across three major players, the registries, the registrars, and actually to a more limited extent, the registrants as well. We think it's important to recognize that all three play a role in making sure that the Internet is secure and that malicious conduct is limited. The second document was actually a set of recommendations we made around the applicant guidebook as ways to identify and evaluate applications that were coming in for financial services primarily. And while we started out as those four groups, which clearly are U.S.-centric groups, we also worked with a number of other organizations and shared the requirements, trying to internationalize the support for this. And we subsequently got the support of the International Banking Federation and the Australian, British, and Canadian Bankers Associations. And we anticipate that more international organizations will be signing on in support. Kind of where we are today, overall, we still have concerns in a number of areas. I'm not going to go into those because clearly we've all heard them as the days have been going on, and I'm sure we'll all hear more about them. And we truly believe that ICANN is working effectively to try and resolve a lot of those issues. Our focus is really on the security and resiliency for the moment, and we do recognize through Greg's work and the staff's work that there has been a lot of good faith effort put into this. And so we continue to encourage that, obviously. On the security in particular, we are highly supportive of the idea of the high security domain certification. In fact, as we look through the applicant guidebook, and like my friend here to my right, we have not yet submitted our comments, so some of this is a little preliminary. But we are very encouraged to see that a number of the recommendations we made around requirements have actually made it into the let's apply this to all new GTLDs. So apart from just the high certification concept, a lot of the ideas, particularly around things like the background checks, the DNSSEC, the thick who is, are items that we had recommended. And now that they've made it really across the board, that's very encouraging to us. There are obviously a couple of lingering concerns for us. We are very concerned about financial services. Greg mentioned financial services a few times as he was talking. And I might just hasten to add that while we think this is important for financial services, there's a strong belief that this has to be important to a number of other industries as well. Industries like healthcare, as an example, that are exchanging a lot of private and confidential information, maybe not directly to their patients, but certainly over the Internet to different organizations. So we're actually a little surprised that other industries haven't jumped into the fray here, and we would encourage them to do so. Our two lingering concerns at this point are that we're a bit concerned that this is still an opt-in model. Quite frankly, we think financial services is pretty critical. Most countries have identified it as a piece of critical infrastructure. We think there's, given the attack vector that's there, that you know we're contemplating whether we're going to recommend that this not be an opt-in, but we'd like to reconsider that it be a requirement for all financial services domains. The second kind of lingering concern is around the objection process. I think it's good that we're recognized as a community that can object to applications, but we are concerned with the cost and effort of doing that as well. We are concerned that our objection may not carry the day in the end, that as it goes into dispute resolution, it might be possible that a dispute resolution panel could pass on a financial services domain that isn't particularly secure and doesn't go for the high level of security. So those are two lingering concerns we're going to be looking at. Going forward from here, Greg mentioned the high security working group. We are very supportive of that and anticipate that we will participate heavily in that. We think we can leverage the requirements that we've already submitted and take those to be perhaps eventual criteria for the high security certification. We will continue to work with others both in the industry and outside of the industry to make sure that the issue of malicious conduct is being addressed effectively. As I mentioned, we are looking and will probably press for mandatory security requirements around financial service GTLDs. And as I also mentioned, I guess we will be submitting comments to draft three, certainly by the deadline. And if there are more drafts, we will continue to submit comments to them. So with that.
Thank you, Paul. With that, we're going to turn to Jin-Hyun Cho, who is a senior researcher at KRCERT, Coordinating Center, the Korean Computer Emergency Response Team. Jin-Hyun has been involved in international cooperation in the cybersecurity community for CERT, AP-CERT, and FIRST, the Global Forum for Incident Response Teams, and international organizations such as APEC and OECD. So with that, over to you.
Thank you, Greg, for kind of introduction. And as a person who involved many years for incident handling, I have been some phishing handlings and other malicious activities within internet. I'd like to highlight my personal search about the high security job verification program. It is a worthwhile and good approach for the some DNS registry and registrar. It seems to me it is similar to the ISO 17779 some security models for corporate. This will be enhanced the security. Some kind of reading by example, well, some specific industry like banking or healthcare can enhance the security by example. This could be one good read, but from my perspective, we have to consider we may be secure as the least secure level. It means we have to make internet secure. All of the security person involved, all the internet users, it means we have to raise the baseline of internet security, not just some specific industry like banking. Most of some phishing cases are not happening in the some banking industry DNS names. Just they are exploiting the some DNS names of the banks. It means we have to consider raising the baseline of the all internet security, including even some DNS names. As a person from CERT community, I'm really happy to hear some ICON is considering adopting some thick file. Whose information is one of the key information when we tracking the who is behind the some incident or DNS abuse, and if we have some much more information on this, who is we can track back some so more efficiently. And well, about the, some of the centralized jump file, it can be another help for the CERT or CSERT, even to the some law enforcement people to track down the who is behind of the some malicious activities or some other issues. Basically, these the two some who is file and the jump file should be updated periodically. Some cases it is not updated properly, so we cannot find any proper person, direct person who is behind of some malicious activity. This is some issues. If possible, I hope new GTL framework can give some obligation all the GTLD to update every year for the some entries of their own information. And the next one is about the some abuse, mandatory abuse contact and policy. This is another key some issues in the incident handling or phishing cases handling. So if possible, well, in case of Lestri and Lestra, could have a 24 hours and 7 days POC point of contact, because well, internet is operated over the globe. Some countries are in the morning, some countries are in the late light. They can even meet within days. So all some server administrator cannot operate 24/7 days. So in case of that, some registry or registrar can do some incident handling jobs on behalf of some other relevant restaurant. That is my personal views on this some ICANS proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we're going to turn to the final speaker on this panel, Supervisory Special Agent Robert Flame, Operational Technology Division, Federal Bureau Investigation. Bobby coordinates the FBI's efforts on internet governance with ICANN and the regional internet registries.
Thank you, Greg. After this session, we're actually going to have a law enforcement session, so I'm not going to talk very long, just so you don't get sick of the sound of my voice too early. But the one thing that I did want to comment on and support wholeheartedly as a cyber investigator was the idea of the high security zone verification program that Greg was mentioning earlier. We like the idea that you're vetting registries, registrars. You're also vetting the registrant information, which is in here, Principle 3. We think the best approach to fighting crime is to preventing it in the first place. And this is a very good start. We, my law enforcement partners that are here from the UK, Switzerland, Thailand, and I believe Korea is here as well, we want to tell you about the DNS crimes that we're facing. And because it's such a challenge on the international front in capturing criminals in all corners of the globe, it's key that we stop it from even happening in the first place. And I think that the high zone or the high security zone verification program is an excellent start. We actually have proposals that we are going to talk about in the next session. We're also going to present to the GAC. We're going to talk about at the Registrar Accreditation Agreement Working Group. We're going to talk about it there as well. But the key is making sure that the information is accurate, that it's vetted, and that it's publicly available so that it can easily be accessed. So that being said, we would encourage that it not be an opt-in program, but a standard, which the entire internet community is registrars, registries, registrants from A to Z can embrace. So that's all I really had to say for this session, and I look forward to talking to you again at the next session. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Bobby. So we are at almost exactly 5:30. This panel started about 15 to 20 minutes late. My plan is to try to take 10 to 15 minutes of questions and allow the next session to run its full half hour from about quarter till 6 to 6:15. Hopefully, if somebody from meetings tells me that that's going to be problematic, I'll adjust my plan. But with that, I'd like to open the floor for at least 10 minutes of questions and then quickly transition to the next panel.
Hi there, my name is Evan Leibovich. I'm with the North American region of At Large, and I wanted to expand on something that Mr. Rasmussen said, which has to do with accuracy. I'm really surprised why this is even a contentious issue at all, without even regard to the debate about thick versus thin who is. Why isn't it simply a requirement of the registries that people provide accurate who is information? Is this not a core issue at the heart of, you know, accountability for both identifying the bad players and making people accountable? I'm curious to know why this is even a debatable topic about if you've got who is, why not insist that it's accurate, that people don't put Wrigley Field as their address?
I'll let other people comment. I don't think there's actually a debate about the fact that we should strive for who is accuracy. I think the challenge is, you know, how do you achieve that goal? But or even have demands for it. Still, making that happen is the challenge. So if any of the other panelists would like to comment.
Yeah, I would just say that I don't think the issue is that we all demand or should demand accuracy. I think the issue is, what are the processes that are going to be in place to validate the accuracy? So if you give me an address, and let's not use one quite as like Wrigley Field, let's use one that appears to be legitimate but isn't really your legitimate address, you know, there has to be a process in place for you for a validation of that information when it comes in. There has to be a process in place for validation of the credit card that you use to do the registration. I mean, I'm sure my friends in law enforcement will tell you how many times bogus credit cards are being used to do registrations, right? And then when something happens and you try to go back, it just isn't there. So I don't think it's a question of do we want it to be accurate. I think everybody wants it to be accurate. I think it's a question of what kind of process do you need to put in place to validate the accuracy of the information you're getting, so that if something does happen when you go back, you're going back to something legitimate.
I think we want to try to move through as many questions as possible. So to the right.
Okay, my name is Werner Staube. I'm working amongst other things on financial TLDs, and so I'm very happy to have heard the things that were said just before about the importance of high-level security in the case of financial TLDs, and of course the fact that these financial domains must be developed with or through the financial community. Now, specifically in the case of financial domain name, the GTLDs that are for financial purposes, the initiative that we have for high security is certainly the right direction, but I believe that the GTLDs would have to go far beyond that level of security. If you look at .bank, the only reason why it should exist is security, so as to have a computer and human readable label that people can recognize that the security is being used, first of all, and secondly, that machines can check it, just like machines check dollar bills or, you know, euro bills on their validity, just as the humans can also check them on their validity, both with their respective capabilities. Now, it leads me to the observation that we will always have to have different levels of security, so it must be an objective to have new GTLDs in the sense of enabling specific policy islands in the DNS space where extreme or very high security can be deployed and is going to be recognized, which is going to be differentiated from the level of security we have elsewhere in other TLDs.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. The concept paper does envision working with the technical community and the the people who develop web applications to try to get some of that visibility into, you know, that this is, you're operating in a highly secure zone. So with that, I think I'll take one more on this side and then over to you.
Thank you. Steve Metallitz here on behalf of the Coalition for Online Accountability. I think one question that arises from this panel is why the high security zone standards were not made mandatory in ICANN's proposal. And so I guess I'd like to ask Greg that question. And if the answer is that you don't know the boundaries within which it should be made mandatory, maybe you could say what types of registrants don't deserve to have this level of protection.
So the notion was basically that the internet is a diverse place, you know, and that, you know, that a market would allow for those who would desire to operate in more secure zones, you know, give them a mechanism for understanding when they were and they weren't, and that because there are significant costs of the implementation of, you know, the type of program we're envisioned for high security zones, that it may not be appropriate for all, you know, GTLDs, depending on the business model and the, you know, target audience for them, to necessarily have to go that full road. So that was the basic, you know, reason.
But you're not requiring it for any. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's because?
That's because we believe those in those situations, the registry operators that need to provide that level of trust will seek the certification, and we want to design a program.
I think the danger, of course, is that the bad guys won't provide it, the good guys will, and there's no disincentive in the evaluation process for the bad guys not to do that. They get treated exactly the same as the good guys, and that doesn't seem quite right in the evaluation process. You don't get any additional points in the evaluation process for doing the right thing.
Though there are a number of steps in the evaluation process that do talk to operational security and resiliency that are scored processes, not solely seeking a high security verification. Thank you. Ram.
Hi, my name is Ram Mohan. I'm the ESAC liaison to the ICANN board. A question for the panelists. I heard you speak earlier about the importance of who is and how that has a significant impact on your ability to do your jobs and to take down domains and you know, really protect registrants and organizations from bad behavior. Question to the panel is, what is your view on proxy registrations? I ask this because I hear two sides of an argument. I hear folks who support proxy registration say it is a validated Whois mechanism. If you want to reach somebody, you actually can reach somebody. There is an email address and there is a phone number, and you can reach them. Of course, the actual registrant is hidden. So I hear one side, and I hear the other side that says a proxy registration is nothing more than just a sham for the bad guys to go and hide underneath. So do you have a view on this topic?
I'm going to turn this over to the other panelists.
I'll be the first to take arrows on that one. I think that the Whois issue is, you know, has a long and sordid history within the ICANN community. I brought it up here on my own points here because it comes up again and again and again in our community. And, you know, though I realize that this isn't a Whois discussion, and I don't want it to be one, there are some points that our community just wants to get over to the ICANN community, is that this is important. On the question of proxies, and I think it really depends on who's using them for what purpose, and the upcoming Whois studies, I think, are going to be very important for identifying some of the behaviors that are being used or going on underneath proxy registrations and how valid those proxy registrations may be. But in general, a proxy registration is not an operational proxy. In that, if a typical proxy, if I contact them to let them know that there is a hacked website, they're not really set up to handle that. So from that point of view, from a responder's point of view, that's an impediment because there's another layer and another way how you have basically a blockade in order to be able to get through. Law enforcement has some special powers, and I can let, you know, our law enforcement folks talk about that to be able to get past the proxies. But in general, as most malicious activity is dealt with by private individuals, either the brands are being attacked, individuals being attacked, or a service provider that's taking care of them. So dealing with proxies does add that layer. I certainly think there are legitimate uses for proxies, and we've heard those over time and time again. I don't want to go into those right now. But it's certainly an issue within our community, and especially the use of what are probably not legitimate companies as proxies, or basically just fake information that mimics the proxies. And, you know, again, the WHOIS studies hopefully will expose some of that.
Bobby, did you have a comment?
Yes. There is definitely, number one, I just wanted to say that, you know, we would always support any national law. We support the privacy of an individual, a non-commercial individual who has a domain name. That being said, it is a serious issue for law enforcement because I've done a study within the FBI where I asked the individual field office to actually do cyber investigations if proxy registrations are an issue. Number one, is there criminality or are criminals using proxy registrations? And number two, does it encumber their investigations? And the answer was yes to both. It does. There are criminals who do use it in child porn, in phishing, in botnets, you know, the entire gamut. Secondly, although Rod indicated that we have special powers, it's still an issue because if I am conducting an investigation in the United States and I track a domain name using a proxy registration to England or Brazil or South Africa or Japan, I can't simply hand them a court order. That's impossible. I would have to go through an extremely lengthy, which can take months, sometimes at a minimum, to actually get that information. And as we know, digital information is very perishable, and the criminal has moved on to the next domain name site. So yes, it is an issue for us, and in hindering and also criminals using it.
Thank you, Bobby. I think we want to try to close this very rapidly. So in the interest of time, I know we have had a couple more people come up to the mics, but we're going to have to keep the questions very short and the answers crisp, or cut it to these last three questions.
Okay. My name is Roland Perry. I'm speaking here as an individual, but also as a member of the Registration Abuse Working Group. I'd just like to highlight the issue that it's not just in the WHOIS, and putting aside all the proxy stuff, it's not just in the WHOIS that you get incorrect contact information. It is quite often the case that somebody will have maybe useless or otherwise information that's in the WHOIS, which is nevertheless still correct, but then they put a false name and address on their actual website. So you buy something, the consumer buys something from the organisation, it's never delivered. They write or telephone the contact details on the home page, and it turns out to be a completely innocent bystander. So I was just wondering to what extent the work that you're doing could encompass that particular situation, maybe to encourage some sort of notice and takedown process for websites that are committing that particular kind of bad acting.
Again, without trying to go into a lengthy set of responses, we certainly do envision that some of the anti-abuse provisions, particularly in the high security zone, will facilitate more rapid actions against those sorts of situations. So, to the speaker to the left.
Yes, my name is Bob Hutchinson. I am speaking as an individual. I'm wondering who the high security zone value, as it's currently proposed, is targeted at. Is it targeted at registrants or internet users as a whole, or how are people going to perceive and utilize the value for the cost that you're talking about adding into the middle, the middle of the internet infrastructure, so to speak? We have ways of dealing with security issues that you've talked about. I mean, banks today work over the internet, okay? Who is going to benefit from this raising of the bar and, you know, adding another smorgasbord of requirements for TLD register owners? Okay, that's the question.
Okay, so we're going to have to try to be crisp. My perspective is, you know, as we develop this program, we need to make the value proposition clear. In the concept paper, it does identify the need to have a communication plan to a wide range of potential, people to include the the technical community that would allow users to understand if they were or were not in a, you know, verified zone. Certainly, you know, our interactions with the banking and finance community, you know, they want to cross, have an understanding of the zones in their space and which ones are more or less secure. Again, if any other panelist has a quick comment, I'd ask them to make it now.
I probably couldn't do it quick.
Okay.
But I'll be happy to talk to him after.
Okay. One more.
I'll just try to be quick. My name is Jonathan Zook. I'm from the Association for Competitive Technology. And I'm worried that these high security zones just become another medallion program, that as long as I've installed the right software or something on my servers, I've reached this high bar that we've set for security, instead of really having a more in-depth evaluation of a particular zone to see whether they've implemented policies and practices and personnel, frankly, to really create a secure zone. And that, you know, the fact that I've installed some software, any of us that have been involved with software know that that's very rarely going to meet the real requirements that we have for a secure zone.
So if you get a chance to look at the concept paper, the sample criteria lists everything from, you know, the implementation of good practice for incident response and, you know, the application of technologies like authorization technologies or authentication technologies, but it very much looks to processes that vet the personnel who will be working at the registry and registrant level. And the final comment, and probably a good way to close this, is that concept is very much open to the community now to give us feedback on, you know, what is the right way to implement that, how to make it a value-added proposition, how to organize it, you know, in an effective fashion. So in some ways, the concept paper really is now in your hands. We will form a working group. You know, we will want as much input as possible as to how to do this effectively, to include criteria, again, value propositions, how we cover the costs that might be associated with such a proposition. So thank you. So with that, I'm going to ask everybody to thank the speakers for this panel and make a quick transition to the next one.